if I know by talking to that realtor, I've got to do all 100 units, I'm at $9,000 a unit, I'm at 900,000. Okay. Now I got my budget. I'm probably going to add 10% to that. I'm at $1 million. Perfect. I'm done. I know that I can base my purchase price off $1 million renovation to decide if this is a deal or not. Now, once we get into the due diligence, then it's time to have your contractor involved and to really make sure that your $1 million budget was right or wrong. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today, but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and with me, as always, on this Wednesday is John Stiles with Bridge Realty. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Todd. It's a good day to be alive.
Good, beautiful, and snowy day. Like it seems like every Wednesday we're talking about how much snow we just got.
Yep.
Well, you've got kiddos out of school today because we had so much snow. We got clobbered with about 15-ish inches of snow, depending on where you are in the metro. And my kids are actually still at home right now as we're recording this as well. Hopefully they're not choking each other out because I'm in the other room with my earbuds on, but they should be good. So yeah, so 15 inches of snow and it's April, mid-April. So beautiful. Gotta love it.
Well, we should have a nice, really hot summer then, right?
Yeah, something like that. I'm sure it equates somehow. So it's funny. I was watching the news a little bit. I never watched the news, but I was actually watching hockey. Had some hockey on kind of in the background. And I went back into that room and the game was over. I'd left and done other things, but I left the TV on and the game was over. So then the news was on and it was actually on the weather and they were going over our winter and we had almost no snow in November and December. Yeah. And we got clobbered then the rest of the year. And we're actually in the top 10 snowiest winters this year now.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because we had nothing in like November, December. We had a little bit of snow in October, a little bit in November, December, and then we just got clobbered again. The gates open.
Yep. Well, hey, it's at least the kids can get some more sledding in and stuff like that.
Yeah, heck yeah. Mine were out building snowmen and playing and sledding, and so good times.
So, well, listen, we wanted to do a little bit more information on apartment investing. We've been on this series for several weeks now. But I think that's really great that we're just kind of diving really deep into each one of these topics. So today, even though we've touched on it a little bit before, we wanted to dive deep on estimating repairs. And I think this is a really good, important one to go deep on, because it can really make or break your investment.
Yeah, absolutely. And this goes with, you know, whether you're doing a flip, especially if you're doing a flip, but if you're doing an apartment, you know, renovation or repositioning, quite frankly, even if you're just starting your own business and you're going to buy or lease out a commercial space and you need to renovate it and you're trying to estimate how much it's going to cost, if you're off, it's going to hurt your pocketbook. So I've completed, you know, well over 100 renovations, all ranging from $20,000 budgets up to over, you know, right around that $1 million budget. And you know, I've learned a few things about estimating costs. One of the things I've learned, John, is that it is very difficult to estimate costs, and it's really easy to under budget. It's very easy to under budget. And even with all the experience that I've had and gained, and you'd think I would be spot on my budgeting, but there's times, and even recently I did a project and I was quite a ways off on my budget. And it had to make, it made me take a step back and go, oh my gosh, you know, why was I so far off on my budget? Why did I think I could get it done for the price I thought I could get it done? And it's so easy to get caught up in the numbers, and also easy to get caught with believing other people. And what I mean by that is not necessarily contractors, and even contractors. Contractors will give you some prices, but you got to really go, is that the real price? Or is that just kind of your, I want to get my foot in the door price? But realtors will tell you, oh, that'll cost you $10,000 a door, $12,000 a door, something like that. But you really got to break it down and think about what does that really mean? And can I really get it done for that price? And does that encompass everything? And when I looked at that project, I went, gee whiz, I really should have been able to be a lot closer on the budget. And I really should have been able to say, this is going to cost, you know, $250,000. When instead I budgeted about $50,000 less than that. So
in that situation, did you see what, you know, what you miscalculated or?
Yeah, it was easy. Now there were some things that were hidden, right? There was some costs that were going to be very challenging for me to budget. But again, that comes down to, you've got to have that slush budget. I just didn't have enough there. When I look at the numbers and I go, I only gave myself I can't remember the exact number, but it was pretty small. Like a $10,000 contingency budget. And that type of project, and that big of a project, and with that many question marks, I should have given myself a $25,000, maybe even up to $30,000 slush budget. And I didn't. I was trying to run my numbers tight. And there was no reason for it, because the deal, even at the $250,000, even if I would have spent $350,000, the deal was still a good deal. So why wouldn't I just budget enough from the first place? I'm not really sure what I was thinking and why I was trying to be so stingy on my budget. But it just came down to being sloppy.
Okay. You know, with all your experience, can you give some examples of the types of renovations that you have done? Specifically, you've done roughly 100 homes, single family homes.
Well, I call it just projects. So I've done 100, well over 100, you know, apartment buildings, single family, some mobile home park. What else? I don't know. Lots of different stuff. But yeah, I guess mainly single family, duplexes, fourplexes, residential stuff. And then I've done some, you know, larger apartment buildings, but it's all mostly been residential, a little bit of commercial too.
And were most of those renovations projects, did they involve lots of cosmetics, or did you get much into the structural changes?
Yeah, good question. So I've done everything. I've done everything from just, you know, cosmetic project, you know, where we're putting a little lipstick on the project, and I shouldn't say lipstick on it because that makes it sound like you're just covering things up. But we've done as, you know, as little as just some kitchen remodel, bath remodel, painting, flooring, light fixtures, you know, the stuff that you can see. And then we've done as much as, I've done additions. I've done pop-a-top where you rip off the second, you know, half the second. Usually we got a story and a half or just an attic, and we rip that off and go up vertically. I've done new construction. I've done structural, lots of structural stuff. Some of these old houses, they're porches in the front. They don't have any structure behind them. They put them on the ground and they're attached to the house and they're just cheesy. People didn't build things right in the, you know, early 1900s. So you have to fix that. We bought one building that had a finished space above the porch. Well, there was no footings, so we had to put footings in. As I walked the building right away, it didn't have, this is the same building. Something just didn't line up when I was on the main level and the upper level. And then you go down the basement and you go, something, it just doesn't line up. Something's going on here. And then you figure it out and go, oh, there's no basement underneath this portion of the house. I wonder what's going on. Is there even a foundation? Quite frankly, there on that house, there wasn't a foundation. It was just a structure sitting on the dirt. And so we've done stuff like that. I've taken out load bearing walls and replaced them with, you know, large beams. I don't know, all kinds of stuff like that. So yeah. little bit of everything. I'm definitely not scared. I've had houses where the foundations are collapsing. And I've done a few different types of things to that, that you can fix it. I've gone as far as we had to dig out and take out one quarter of the house. So we had to take a one entire wall and actually a little bit of the other wall, and then rebuild that completely from the ground up. Done that. I think I did that twice. So a little bit of everything.
Wow.
I like getting my hands dirty. Well, I don't get my hands dirty. I like getting other people's hands dirty.
Yeah, yeah. So a couple of questions on that. So when you go into a project, you know, how do you decide which things you really want to do, which things you should do, you know, definitely, in kind of balancing the cost benefit of doing something versus are you going to get a return back on it?
Yeah, so that's a really important question. The second part of that question is extremely important that you asked there. And that is, can you get a return on what you're doing? Because if you buy a house and it needs a new roof and it needs a new, let's say you have to replace a quarter or more of the foundation, are you adding any value to that house? And the answer is no. You're not. It's no kind of, okay. So it's, are you adding value? Sure. A little bit, right? Most people look at that house with the big foundation problem and just get scared away. So are you adding that type of value? Sure. But you're not adding, as silly as it sounds, you're not adding as much value as if you just replaced a kitchen, put in a brand new kitchen with some granite and, you know, made that really nice. That adds more value than fixing that foundation or than replacing that roof or then, you know, doing the maybe the windows or something like that. So there's things that add a little value and that there's things that add a lot of value. And the stuff that adds a lot of value is the stuff that, John, you can actually see And it's that shiny object type syndrome where you go in and you go, oh, wow, this kitchen is beautiful, or this bathroom. I love this bathroom. I can really see myself, you know, going to the bathroom in the bathroom. you know, I love these floors. I love the light fixtures. Light fixtures are something that adds a ton of value, but people don't see it. It's because it adds that kind of that value that's almost hidden, or that you know, when you walk in and everything's clean and crisp and the light fixtures match with the doorknobs, match with the hinges, match with the plumbing fixtures, that all kind of clean, just flowing, but paint and stuff like that. You ever see somebody walk into a house and go, oh, I love this roof. It's just a nicely done roof. You know, I don't think your wife or whoever's the decision maker is going to go, wow, we should buy this house. It's got a really nice foundation wall. That's really beautiful. They did a great job. So you got to think of the stuff that people go, wow, that's beautiful, versus wow, that's functionable. So,
and at the same time, if you don't address those concerns, if it's got a bad foundation or a bad roof, you know, those are going to turn people off from buying or renting that place.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got a furnace and it's older than the people that are going to be buying it, likely they're, you know, they're going to think that the furnace needs to be replaced. So replace the furnace. But is the furnace, you know, I used to have an HVAC guy who was used to tell me off. I put this furnace for $2,000. That's going to add $5,000 to, you know, your house. But that's not true. If you put a furnace in for $2,000, it's going to add, you know, maybe $2,500 worth of value to the house. What it's likely going to do is not add any value to the house. It's going to add, you know, zero, maybe up to 2,000. So you might get your return back, but what it's going to do is it's going to sell your house even faster. So, and it's going to cause less problems during the inspection contingency. It's just going to make it that much easier, and it's probably the right thing to do. So when you're looking at, so this, all this talk about, you know, what we've been saying is when you're looking at a house or apartment or whatever it is, what you've got to do is you've got to say, okay, these items add value. You know, putting in a $8,000 kitchen is going to add, you know, $16,000 worth of value or whatever that is. Okay. When I do that, that adds the value. But when I replace the roof, when I replace the furnace, when I do this and this and this, they're not adding necessarily value or much. They're maybe helping me sell my house faster. So these things aren't adding value. So why should I do them? Well, how do I monetize this, or how do I think of it monetarily? Well, you've got to take the cost of those and you've got to actually take it off your purchase price. Yeah. So, I mean, if we got that roof and we're taking, you know, $5,000 roof, and you've got to take off $5,000 or close to it for the purchase price, because that's what you're going to spend on the roof and you're not going to really gain that value. But with a kitchen where we go, I got to put $8,000 into it, we don't necessarily have to take off $8,000 worth of value to that kitchen, because we know we're adding $16,000 to it. So you might not have to take off nearly as much. So we just got to think about what our costs are and what kind of value it's adding. You might not want to just take on a project that has some needed costs that might not be worth doing. So if it's got a roof and it's got a furnace and it's got a water heater and it's got, you need to put in new plumbing and you've got to do new electrical and you've got to fix the foundation and you've got to, you know, do other things that maybe aren't adding that much value. And then maybe you can do a kitchen and a bathroom. But you look at that and go, holy cow, look at all that work I've got to do. I've got to put $80,000 into this house, and it's going to take me 9 months because of the scope of the project. Is it really worth doing, where I can go into this house and put $30,000 on into it and make the same return on investment? Even though your return on investment is the same, the headache And the mistake factor is so much larger in the other house. And that's what you got to look at too, is not just the return on investment. Look at the mistake factor. And by that, I mean, can you mess up? If you start getting into foundations, you start getting into other, just you start digging into walls, you're going to open up this wall to make this beautiful open floor plan. Well, I got news for you. Your contractor might tell you it's going to cost $2,000 to open up that wall. But when he finds out that there's mold in there, that there's, you know, some heat vents going through there, some electrical going through there, something else, you know, happening, or maybe it wasn't built right. And that was a load bearing wall, but it wasn't built right. Now you got to jack up the entire house, or, you know, you whatever, just problem after problem after problem could occur. And now we've got a $2,000 expense turns into a $10,000 expense. Multiply that by three mistakes in a big project, and now you're underwater.
Yeah.
So,
you know, a lot of times I'll talk to homeowners who are thinking about selling their property, and they're wondering, which things should I do? You know, am I going to get my money back on it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of those types of things, like the roof and the foundation, if that's a concern already, you know, it's hard to sometimes, but I try to convince them that it's not about getting a huge return. It's about actually selling the property. You know, it's actually about removing objections from potential buyers, because they're not going to just estimate the cost to do the project. They're going to be estimating, like you've talked about here, the cost, the time, the financing, the, you know, the hassle. So it removes a lot of buyers. And buyers, rightfully so, because of the unknowns, will inflate their repair budget, because they need to make, you know, they need to take into consideration that whoops factor.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I would say you're right on how you approach it. The only thing I would add to that, maybe, and you probably say this already to your sellers, but if you can't afford it, don't do it, right?
Sure.
If it's going to put you in the hole, you can't afford it, just don't do it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, a roof is, to me, unless it's really bad, shouldn't be done. But you've got other things that potentially should be done. You might have, you know, things that aren't cosmetic that you know are going to be issues during the inspection. So do those things if you can to get rid of that problem. Get rid of the little things, especially. You know, I always would say it as anybody who's selling their house is getting inspection done prior to, and that way you can see the problems, and that way you can repair the little things. The less little things there are, the better. And even big things, I mean, if it's big ticket items, but if it's hey, this roof is old, it's gonna have to be replaced, you know, within the next 5 years, that's different than this roof is old, it's gonna have to be replaced tomorrow.
Right. You know,
if it has to be replaced tomorrow, yeah, replace it if you can afford it. Now that goes with you know, with apartment buyers and sellers too. With apartment owners, what I would always suggest, and this is what I do, is if I've got a roof that has to be replaced, but we think it's got, let's say, 3 to 5 years left, and I think I'm going to sell the building in, let's say, 5 to 8 years, I'm going to wait. Try to wait till not too long till it starts leaking, but I'm going to wait as long as I can to replace that roof, because I would rather be able to advertise brand new roof than, you know, have a roof that's 6 years old or 5 years old or whatever.
Yep.
So wait on items that aren't going to affect your tenants and aren't going to. You know, same thing with furnace. If you've got an old furnace and you know, I got to replace this thing, don't replace it day one. Wait until, you know, either it breaks down or you just know, you know, your mechanic goes, look, this thing is just not going to last. You got to replace it. So I've got a boiler in one of my properties that I had It didn't work quite right one winter, and I had a repair guy go over, and he fixed it up, and he said, "Hey, you got to replace this thing. It's going to cost you whatever it was, like $12,000. You got to replace it. It's this year. Otherwise, you know, we can do it in the summer, but it's not going to last next winter. It's been 6 years. It's still running beautifully."
Yeah.
So,
you know, one thing you mentioned about the little things in a property, if you can address those, I think that goes a long way, because when buyers are looking at a property and they notice a lot of little things, then they kind of make assumptions about what other things did this homeowner or apartment owner not address.
Yep.
Because they didn't even address the little things.
And the little things might cost you $2,000. Mm-hmm. But when this homeowner, especially a person that doesn't understand construction, when they look at that list and they go, "Oh my gosh, there's 43 items on this list," they're freaking out and they're getting out of the deal as quickly as they can. They don't want to continue to buy this house, even though those, you know, 40 plus things could have been $2,000. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, they just freak out because they don't get it. They don't understand it. It's just a lot. It's just like when you walk into somebody's house and it's clustered full of crap. Have you ever done that? You walk into somebody's house and there's so much crap you can barely move, and you go, "Oh my gosh, this house is a disaster." But two dumpsters and the house would be just fine. You know, it's like that is the easiest rehab project you could ever have, is a couple dumpsters full of people's crap. Underneath, yeah, we might have to rip out the carpet and redo the hardwood floors, but that's it, you know.
Yeah.
So people freak out about silly things that they shouldn't be freaking out about, but that's just how it is.
Yeah. That perspective and can go a long way.
Yeah.
So when we're approaching a project, apartment building that needs a lot of repairs, you know, can we get into some of the specifics? You know, obviously people's prices are going to change based on their location, based on the contractor they use. But just for an example, you know, if we're going to do a renovation, what are some of the numbers that would come to mind?
Yeah, well, let's get into the gritty here. So I actually had the reason this topic kind of came up and I decided let's expand on this is because I had one of my investors email me. He's an investor and he also, you know, is buying stuff on his own. And he asked me a question about repairs. And I said, you know, well, a lot of people need to know a little bit more about repairs. So I figured I'd talk about this. So one of the things I think the biggest piece of advice I can get is you get a list of items and how much they cost. So how do you do that? You do it a few different ways. You've got your property manager, you've got your realtor, and you've got your contractor. And the contractor is obviously the most important to go off of. But you should be able to get a list. Hey, contractor, how much does a brand new furnace cost? Just a typical furnace. You don't have to tell me, you know, exactly, but how much it costs? $2,000? Great, $2,000. How much does an AC cost? Oh, that's $2,000 as well? Perfect, $2,000. We're going to replace these kitchens. The best way is to have them go through a project with you, whether you've done it, somebody else has done it, they've done it, or it's a prospect. But hey, these kitchen cabinets and countertops, I'm just going to do, you know, these types of cabinets, countertops, laminate, whatever you're going to be doing. How much does that cost? Oh, $2,800 to rip out these, replace them, put in new ones. That's including the cabinets and countertops. Okay, great. $2,800. You put that on your list. How much is a new bathroom vanity? $500 to install. And okay, cool. How much is a new toilet? $250. All right, cool. You know, how much does it take to paint this apartment? $1,500. Does that include the paint? Yeah, that's include the paint. All right, cool. You know, you get it. How much is the flooring? What kind of flooring? Oh, we're doing luxury vinyl planking. That's the stuff I like to put in. Let's say we're just doing this whole, you know, unit. Oh, that's, you know, that's $2.50 a foot. Oh, this apartment's about $2,500. Okay, cool. So you just get that type of list going, you know, and once you run into something that you don't know. Let's say you didn't ask the contractor how much does it cost to replace all the interior doors. Well, you know what? Call the contractor up, say, hey, I got a project. I need to put in new 6-panel doors. I want them to be solid core, or I want them to be hollow core. How much would it cost me? We'll just keep the frames. We'll keep the trim. We'll do all that, but we'll just pop out the old doors. They're slab doors. A bunch of them have holes in them. We're going to put in the new 6-panel. We got to put the doorknob on. We got to put, you know, hinge it, all that kind of stuff. How much does that cost per door? Oh, okay. That costs, you know, $200 per door, including the door. Okay, cool. And then does that include painting? No. Okay. Painting is an extra, you know, $50. All right, great. You write that down. So you might run into extra things, but at least you've got this long standing list. And now you can go through and go kitchen, boom, $2,800. Bathroom vanity, $5,000. Bathroom vanity surround, you know, $2,000 or whatever. Toilet, $250. Paint, $15. You know, you can keep on going down that list. And now you walk through this property, you've got this big long checklist. You've got, you know, 8 of the 10 items checked off. You only have to call your contractor on 2 items. It takes you 5 minutes. You're done. You can then add in your slush budget to that thing. You know, minimum of 10%. And then you're off to the races. So getting ideas on pricing in your area, again, in your area. So if I'm going to be doing a project in, you know, Cincinnati, I'm based out of Minneapolis. I'm not going to call my Minneapolis contractor and go, hey, how much does it cost to put in new kitchen cabinets and countertops? And, you know, I've got 10 feet of cabinets and countertops. How much does it cost? I don't care what he thinks. I care what my contractor in Cincinnati thinks. So,
yeah, a couple of pointers I just want to call out in what you just said. You know, when you get these prices and you're having this conversation, it's a good idea to clarify that includes materials and labor, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's huge when they say, oh, it's going to cost you this. And you go, oh, cool. That's a great price. Oh, but the paint didn't cost the paint itself. That was only $1,500 for the labor. And then we got to prep. And then we got to, you know, buy the paint. And it's like, oh, great. Now it's $2,200?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and I got to get some supplies. I got to get paintbrush.
Yeah, paint rollers and brushes. And you expect, you know, I'm going to pay for that. What? I thought it was $1,500. No, now it's $2,300. You know, that quickly ruins your budget right there. If we're not including everything. Yep. And that's why you've got to talk to the contractor. And it's really easy. If you deal with a contractor over and over, it's really easy to make that relationship with that contractor. You haven't dealt with a contractor yet. It's still fairly easy. These guys want the job. Have them walk through with you. Now, for me, this is a preliminary budget. This is me walking through a unit and going, okay, all I do when I walk through a unit is I just add things up in my head because I've done this long enough. But with this is my preliminary unit. I go $2,500 for the kitchen, $1,500 for the paint. So now we're at, you know, $4,000. I've got, you know, this and this and this and this. Okay, now I'm at $8,000 for this. I got to add 10%. I'm at 88. So let's bump it up to 9. I'm at $9,000 for a unit. If I know by talking to that realtor, I've got to do all 100 units. I'm at $9,000 a unit. I'm at 900,000. Okay. Now I got my budget. I'm probably going to add 10% to that. I'm at $1,000,000. Perfect. I'm done. I know that I can base my purchase price off $1,000,000 renovation to decide if this is a deal or not. Now, once we get into the due diligence, then it's time to have your contractor involved and to really make sure that your $1,000,000 budget was right or wrong. Okay. Hopefully you were conservative enough with your numbers to where that $1,000,000, the contractor comes in and says, yep, we can get this done for $875,000. And you go, cool. I've got $125,000 contingency budget. I'm not going to take my budget down unless you're way off. Maybe the contractor comes in and says you're at $650,000. Well, geez, you know, I don't need quite so much slush. But the contractor says this is going to cost you $1.3 million. Okay. You know, now hold up. Does this project still make sense at 1.3? And if it doesn't, do I go back to this seller and say, hey, look, I messed up. I missed this, whatever, or this wasn't disclosed or whatever it might be. But I have to buy this building for $3.6 million. I can no longer buy it for $3.8 or whatever that might be. And see if you can renegotiate. Now, you don't want to get in the habit of that. That's why trying to figure it out in the first place and being, you know, being fluffy on your numbers is important.
Yep. When you bring in your contractor, do you typically give him a scope of work? And does that include what you're budgeting? Or do you let him come up with his price and hope it matches up? You know, is there a risk to showing him your numbers ahead of time?
Sure. So that's a good question. And I kind of go back and forth on that, John. And for one, it's important to have your scope and for them to understand what you're trying to achieve. So that's very important. Try not to allow them to make the scope. As far as the numbers, I would not show them your conservative numbers. If you're budgeting $1 million and you want to make sure you hit or are under $1 million, I would not show them $1 million budget. Because likely it'll cost you $1 million. So show them your budget without the fluff, right? Show them your budget that hits you at $825,000. And that's your budget. Now, then they can walk through and go, you know, we can't get this done for $825, but, you know, I think we can really try to save some money and we could probably get it done for $850.
Right.
You're still doing the dance, but I would just be hesitant about showing them your slushy budget because I think they would likely just meet it. And now I'll speak to the contractors out there. Every contractor's different, right? Some contractors are extremely ethical and honest, and they're going to do things. If you show them $1 million budget, they can get it for $850. They're going to show you $850. But others are the opposite, and they're going to, you know, people want to make money. And so if you're willing to pay $1 million, they're willing to charge you $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's different grades of material. So if, I don't know, when you show your scope, are you including, you know, right down to the material, what quality of product you want to put in there?
Yeah, I am. You know, if you're a beginner or if you just haven't, you know, done a lot of construction before, what I would try to do with the contractor is, this is during the... Again, during the due diligence, you know you're going to get this property and the contractor gives you prices that work. Then I would take them to another property nearby that you've likely already walked and you know that that's the condition, that's the type of project you want, and just take them in there and go, this is what I want. This is what I expect. I expect these types of cabinets. I expect these types of countertops. These are my finishes and that. And then they get, you know, then now they can either say, well, geez, you know, I budgeted on, you know, cabinets that were, you know, stock cabinets that are half this quality. I budgeted on granite countertops and you only want laminate. Mm-hmm. So that way you can kind of see where they were, but likely in the beginning, you tell them what your expectations are. That's what you should do. At least you should tell them, look, we're going to do laminate countertops. We're doing luxury vinyl planking. I don't want the really expensive stuff and I don't want the really cheap stuff. I want the stuff that's, you know, middle of the line. It's going to cost $1 a foot type. It's, you know, and so should you do some homework? Should you figure out what you're doing? Yeah, absolutely. I would suggest anybody who's just trying to get into this and try to get started. First of all, don't start with the big project. Don't start with structural issues. Don't start with major, major renovation. You should be starting with, you know, 3 to 5,000, maybe 6,000 per unit renovation. You should be starting with smaller stuff. And then second of all, you know, get people that you could trust to be a part of your first or second project. You know, if you have a contractor as a relative, if you have a, you know, business partner that has understood or done it before, if you can bring somebody in, you know, if you, you know, haven't done this project and you call somebody that's done a bunch of rehabs and say, hey, look, I got this project. I'd really like to do it. Can we partner together? I'll give you whatever, 10% of the deal or 5% or something that's going to make them attracted to it. You know, I really want you there to be able to bounce ideas off you. You know, a lot of people would say yes to that.
Yep.
I get people that ask me to do it for free all the time.
Just another point with, as you described what goes into, for example, changing a door. It's important for, you know, you to understand what's all involved with that. Are you just doing the slab door? Are you getting hollow core? Are you getting the whole pre-hung? Are you getting pre-finished? Are you going to need to paint it afterwards? You know, all those different steps, which again, you want to be directing your contractor to price out what needs to be done so that there's not additions later on.
Yeah, and ask, right? Questions are great. And people get embarrassed by questions, but you know what? If you pose your questions right, A, the contractor won't even understand you're dumb. And B, you'll get the right answers, right? So if you ask a contractor, if you say, hey, well, I want to replace these doors, and the contractor says, you want to replace the whole door or the door, the frame, the trim and everything, or you just want to replace the slab, say, well, you know what? What do you think would be best?
Yeah.
Well, I think we should replace the whole thing. Well, but why? What's the price difference between the two? Well, this one's going to cost $150. This one's going to cost, you know, $62. Okay, well, I really need to stay in my budget. Is there a really big advantage of replacing everything versus the slab only? You know, and then they can explain to you why they think it is. If they think, well, the slabs are trashed and they're cracked and trim is junk and blah, 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 well, maybe it is time to replace everything. But if they go, well, it's just easier to do. Well, that's not an answer. And that just means they just, it's easier to do for them. So they just want to go the easy way out.
Yeah.
And the other way is going to save you money is probably the best way to go. Anytime somebody says that's just easier, usually means it's not the way to go. So,
well, it can mean that it's going to be more labor to do it one way or the other.
Right. If the price is the same.
Sure.
Yep. You know, if he goes, well, it's going to cost you $125 to do the slab and it's going to cost you $135 to do the whole thing. Well, then you probably got to do the whole thing, right? It doesn't make any sense. You get a brand new product. But
so with that, make sure you're comparing the total price for materials and labor on both sides, not just, well, it's cheaper material wise to just get the slab.
Yep. Yeah. I can get it done quicker.
Yeah.
Well, okay. You can get it done quicker, but it's going to save me $100 a door if it takes you a little bit more time.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, there's a lot to think of, for people who are doing renovations. We'll link my blog, because I go into detail a lot of different things. But you have to just remember, you got to remain conservative because it's so easy to go over budget. And the other thing is contractors, again, there's good, there's bad, and there's indifferent, but they're here to make money. So they're not here to make you money. They're here to make themselves money. Good contractors will want to look out for you, but they need to make money, and that's what they do. And so understand that their pricing reflects them making money, and they're going to be looking for other opportunities to be able to make money off of you. And some of them are going to look for opportunities to be able to take advantage of you. And others are just going to look for opportunities to truly make money the way they honestly should make money. So you've got to understand that as well and know who you're dealing with. And just be kind of be on your toes with the contractors. Even after you get to know them a little bit. I've had contractors that I've used for several projects that have, you know, all of a sudden you just go, start catching them doing things that you just didn't expect, I guess. So just, you know, be aware of, you know, of your budgets, be aware of what you're doing, be aware of all the little things. The little things add up quickly.
Yeah. You know, when you're actually getting to the due diligence phase and you're bidding out the actual repairs, do you typically bring in more than one contractor to kind of two or three comparisons, and or do you have you already established your relationship and just work with the one that you already trust and know?
Yeah, it depends on where you are in your phase, right? If you're a beginner, it's nice to bring in a couple. It's always nice to get three or four quotes. When you're doing your due diligence, it's tough, especially if you're walking 100 units, and depends on your access to the property and all that kind of stuff. If you've got several vacant units, what you might do, let's say you're buying a 100-unit building and you've got 10 vacant units in that 100-unit building. So you're buying something that's 90% occupied. And you do your whole due diligence, you walk 100 units, you bring your preferred contractor, the one you think you're going to use, into, you know, maybe 40% of those units or so, or maybe all of them. But then with the other three contractors or two or whoever, you know, you're going with, then you bring them only through the 10 units because it's just going to take too long otherwise. You're just not, and the other property management company, the owner, and everybody else is going to get really peeved. Or you wait until you close and then, you know, bring the other guys in. But if you wait until you close, at least get a bid from a contractor who you know is you're either gonna use or who is at least high on pricing. Because you don't want to get caught and all of a sudden use somebody else that's double their pricing, you know.
Right. You know, there's definitely a lot here to learn ahead of time and then, you know, be familiar with, get comfortable with, but eventually you just got to jump in there and do it, right? I mean, you don't want this to be one of those things that holds you up from actually doing a deal.
Yeah, don't let it paralyze you. And that's with everything. I mean, it's analysis paralysis, right? People do that all the time just with analyzing a rental or analyzing anything, is they just sit and wait because there's a lot to think about. With construction, there's a ton to think about. There's a ton of mistakes you can make and you will make. I continue to make mistakes, and I've done, you know, well over 100 projects. I've done a lot of stuff. I've been the guy doing the stuff. I used to, when I worked my way through college, and then after college when I was a teacher in the summers, I worked remodeling construction. I did the first several flips I did myself. So I've done it. I've managed it. I've managed it from near. I've managed it from afar. I've made a lot of mistakes and I still make mistakes, but those are all learning experiences. As long as you learn from them, truly learn from them and correct the errors you're making, you're doing a good thing. Again, just be conservative. Don't be afraid to pay somebody a 10% of your, you know, profit to get valuable expert experience. But if you're going to do that, make sure you're learning from them and not just using them as a crutch.
Yeah. Very good.
And we should probably do another episode on this because, in the blog, I also wrote about understanding different ages of properties. And so I think we should probably do another podcast on understanding the different ages and the problems that some of those can have as well.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, let's wrap it up here. And for those listeners out there, we really appreciate you tuning in. We really appreciate the shout outs we have on Facebook and LinkedIn and those type of things. So feel free to share this out with your friends. Give us a 5-star rating, and it just helps us to reach more people. And we appreciate that. So
awesome. Well, John, you have an excellent rest of the day with the kids. I suppose you're at the office, so the wife must be at home, or you got a babysitter?
Yep, my wife is with the kids, so.
Enjoying the snow day.
Yep.
Cool. Well, enjoy, John, and have a great rest of the day.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Make every day Saturday. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.